So can I have any questions, please?
Yeah. Just a comment. I think searching for explanation in the sense of accounting for 100% of variability is a bit of a false goal. And the reason I say that, I'll give you an analogy. I used to work in mouse genetics and leukemia induction. You can take identical mice, brother-sister matings, so they can't get much more identical, for a couple of hundred generations, and you keep them in an identical laboratory environment, and you subject them to an identical experimental protocol. You get cancer in 25% of those mice, at most, and in 75% you don't. Now, according to your heritability, I should be searching for a factor to explain that other 75%. What's it, my reading in epigenetics suggests to me is that minor perturbations, very minor perturbations of the environment, push you down either the cancer route or the non-cancer route. And that trying to get to the bottom of something which is possibly equivalent to chaos theory, you know, you're right on the cusp of complex, and the development of an organism is extremely complex, and therefore it wouldn't surprise me if in the epigenetic landscape the tiniest move from one point to another of the landscape pushes you down completely different directions in the organism. So that was my first thought.
Yeah, well, I didn't mention the epigenome, which I'm not sure if everyone is aware of what the epigenome is, but it's the idea that on top of the basic genetic code of A, T, G, and C, you have markers that control whether genes are being turned on or switched off. And so the level of a protein that's manufactured from your genome is controlled by the epigenome markers. The reason I didn't mention it in my talk is there has been absolutely nothing done on the human epigenome and homosexuality because it's still such a new field, and the numbers you're working with are quite small, so there's been no work at all on it in this particular area.
Yeah, I think on that, the organisms you can actually do it on are still extremely limited. We're starting to look at methylation in field conditions, and you've only probably got four or five types of test organisms you can sensibly operate on.
Eleanor, thank you for your excellent talk. You haven't mentioned fluidity, and I wonder if you'd like to comment, particularly with regard to the evidence of adolescents who have a very high chance of reverting from homosexual, identifying as homosexual, to heterosexual.
Yeah, that's certainly true. So there have been a number of longitudinal studies carried out in the US and in New Zealand, which have tracked how sort of the number that people give themselves on a Kinsey scale over time from adolescence through into adulthood. And as I say, about 80 to 90% of people don't change. So the vast majority are stable, but there is a sizable minority who aren't. And you're absolutely right that stability increases as age increases. So adolescents aged 12 and 13 are the most likely to change their sexual orientation at some point in the future. But we're still not entirely sure why that is, possibly just because they're still going through puberty, and therefore influences are still acting on the sexual development process.
Plasticity of the brain could have something to do with this.
Yes, for certainly plasticity of the brain could have something to do with it, if there are influences acting on the brain and causing different neurological developments during puberty, then that could certainly have something to do with it. But that's pretty much unknown at the moment.
Thank you. May I compliment you as well? Does any evidence come from elsewhere in the animal kingdom, particularly other primates?
The problem with using it, I've heard this so often that people say kind of, oh, it appears in the animal kingdom, therefore it's natural, therefore, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's using animal studies in this field is really very problematic, because culture is such an important aspect of human sexual expression, and you don't see those cultures in animals. If you look at one of our closest the most closely related species, which is bonobos. While humans are biologically defined as a monogamous species, bonobos are promiscuous. They'll have sex with basically anything. So I think using them as a model for human sexual development is almost completely useless because they are working off a completely different form of sexual expression. The reason I didn't bring any animals into this talk is because I think that without accounting for culture, you're not really going to get anywhere in looking at the causes of homosexual expression. Rodney?
Great talk. Amongst homosexual couples, do you find, I mean, this is just purely from personal anecdote, but I have found that, say, in a lesbian couple, one is more butch and masculine and the other is more feminine, and similar in, males. Is that a sort of general?
That is certainly a common theme that you get, butch-femme partnerships. But it's certainly not universal. So I don't think we can draw any sort of universal or generalizable conclusions from that and say that therefore that's good evidence that it's to do with gender and with hormones or neurology that are somehow affecting gender. Because there are many couples out there who don't represent that particular stereotype. As I say, like the evidence from hormonal studies is not nothing. So that remains a pretty probable etiology for at least some people. I mean, it's possible that a particularly stereotypically butch lesbian might have elevated androgen concentrations, but that doesn't mean that all other lesbians are like her. So that it could be just something that applies to one individual. So.
Any other questions?
I'll take responsibility and apologise for the technical mix-up.
Yes, I'm sorry, and there were so many good pictures too.
I'll try and resolve that, and it will get posted on the website in glorious video, and it will all come through if you send it.
Well, I hope the content was good enough anyway, even without the pictures. So thank you very much.